Tommy Charlton. Well done, Manchester United.
Into Sheringham, and Solskjaer has done it!
And it's all saved it! United again!
Ready!
On this week's episode of United R, we take a look back at the opening day fixture against the not-so-mighty Hammers. We discuss who would win in a fight to the death between Tony Martial and Marcus Rashford, before wondering which one of our debutants will have more impact this season. We're going to cap off with a nostalgic look back at Captain Marvel before previewing Swansea next week. Hey folks, welcome to United Hour, your hopefully weekly official redcafe.net Manchester United podcast on all things happening throughout the weeks. I'm Colm.
I'm Nick.
I'm Alex.
And we're recording just after the opening Premier League weekend, so obviously there's first game on Friday, a lot of games on Saturday, and then obviously ourselves and Spurs playing on Sunday. We had a resounding, glorious, back to our best win against West Ham, who just did not show up at all, and we're just going to chat about that throughout this podcast. First thing we're going to talk about is the new guy, is Schmizerf. I think that's how you say it, Alex. Is that how we're saying it?
Something like that.
Schmizerf. Yeah, I've no idea. I've given up on red cap names.
Maybe just shorten it to Smith.
Yeah, Smurf, I think, works a lot better.
Yeah.
He has kindly agreed to help us out on some of our Twitter presence and our Facebook posts, so please do go across to Twitter and Facebook and give us a follow or likes if you can. Hopefully be a bit more vocal with a bit of content there, so big thanks to him for that. He also posed a question, Nick, in the last podcast thread about who he thought out of our three summer signings, obviously Lindelof, Matic and Lukaku, would have the most impact in this upcoming season. And I think we might already have some thoughts on that from the first game. So who do you think it'll be? Which one of them three do you think is going to set the world alight this year?
Well, I think we can write off Lindelof pretty quickly
because
he didn't even make the match day squad. But I think, yeah.
But he's got an amazing looking girlfriend.
Well, yeah, I've seen her. Definitely worth the look. But I think Jose said, you know, he's going to take a little bit of time, maybe like Mkhitaryan last season. So, yeah, we're not writing him off as a player, but I don't think he's going to be the standout this season. And obviously, big shout-outs for both Lukaku and Matic, who had good efforts to go man of the match in this game. Them too, I mean, yeah, look, Lukaku got two goals straight off. He scored the other day as well. Looks pretty settled. I mean, the big thing they both is that they're Premier League kind of proven. Mm-hmm. And yeah, sometimes in the past, I see in all these transfer threads, people say, oh, what does it matter if people are Premier League proven, you know? But it makes such a big difference that they immediately look like settled in. They look like they've been there. And they, of course, they're players who've played with Mourinho before as well, which is why straight away they look like part of the system. If I had to choose between those two, who's going to be the main one, I mean, yeah, probably I'd actually say Matic is going to be the bigger difference because, yeah, we talked about on the podcast a couple of weeks ago about still needing to replace Carrick, and he's straight away stepping in there. And yeah. Actually, I think, yeah, me and Alex talked about the game. I said that he's way better than I actually expected. I knew he was a good kind of defensive player and there's obviously going to be a physical presence. But him on the ball, I've been really impressed by how technical and, you know, him beating four or five players was a bit of a shock, to be honest. I didn't really expect that kind of thing from him at all. I thought he'd just be rarely even leaving our half and just be, you know, sat there defending. But yeah, look, I've been so impressed by him. Lukaku, I knew a lot more about. And, you know, we're getting exactly what we expected from him. Whereas, yeah, Matic has been quite a revelation for me after these couple of games. And, yeah, it's, like I said, it's only two matches in so far.
Yeah, it is. And it's, you know, early, it's important not to jump to early conclusions, you know, and get too carried away. But as you say, it's just mind-boggling. You know, I think we probably have all been guilty of not really paying attention to him at Chelsea because he must have had this in his locker. But it's that quality of pass and the arrogance to go and just turn away, beat a man. And it's just, it's been such a pleasant surprise. Alex, what do you reckon out of the three? Well, okay, out of the two.
I mean, on the numbers, you'd probably say Lukaku from the goals, but then I guess on the numbers, that also gives him a slight disadvantage because he's somewhat just replacing what we've lost from Ibra, and then we more have to maybe consider the dynamism that he brings to us. You know, someone who's willing to head out to the wings, who to do some graft up front, to run in behind, who likes a ball in front of him. So I think that's what he'll bring and the difference he'll make. But I do agree that it's Matic, and I said last week that that's going to be the signing that the media talk about as being, you know, the really astute, clever signing, the smart move from Mourinho, doing a masterclass. And already week one, we're seeing the media sort of peddle that line, and he was just brilliant. I think he has always had that in his locker. You know, it's something that I saw watching Chelsea, but he's just typically not the player you expect on the highlights reel, and I think that's why most United fans maybe weren't expecting that. And also, you know, I'm sure the real narrative is just that he's a very good player playing very well for a good team under a manager he knows well. But I'd rather go with the narrative that this season he's got something to prove, because last season Kante came in and he was the sort of the ferocious, tenacious player who was charging around the pitch, winning everything, hounding down the opposition. And I think Matic gave him the freedom to do that because of the spaces he was covering. And that will be hugely, hugely important to us. But when you look at the game yesterday, the sort of the tackles and the interceptions and the defensive sort of statistics that you take from the game were spread very evenly across the team. And I think, one, his positioning, and two, his commanding and his presence enabled some of the other players to you know, to win those balls and make those tackles, and he organised it very well. But actually where he impressed was on the ball. He was absolutely everywhere across the pitch. He wasn't a holding midfielder, you know, very deep in the centre circle. He was literally all over the pitch, both sides of the pitch, supporting the wingers, carrying the ball forward. And of all our players yesterday, Paul Pogba might have had 6 dribbles, but Matic made 7. And they were very good dribbles, and he was very composed on the ball, and he was very progressive with it. And I think if you look at that first goal, he wins the ball back. So, but for that tackle, you know,
wouldn't
have scored. But also, he wins that ball back by hounding a play down, but then he charges up the pitch to support Rashford on the left, on the outside. And I'm almost certain that without that run from him, we weren't scoring that goal. Because you can see that it made the defenders concerned and nervous. They weren't sure what ball Rashford was going to play or whether he was going to shoot. It caused a little bit of uncertainty, just him there supporting and offering himself. And it allowed Rashford to slip that ball through to Lukaku. And on another one of the clips that I'll play throughout the episode, there's 2 goals where it started with him winning the ball and playing it off very smartly. And I think that's going to be incredibly important for us turning sort of defence into attack very quickly this season.
By Matic, the block has taken it to Rashford. Manchester United can break. They've got 5 in this counter-attack. West Ham struggling to match them for numbers. Rashford to Lukaku, 1-0. And that is the finish of a man who is brimming with confidence.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely agree, and 100%. He just looks so keen. You know, I think it's a real rejuvenating sort of move for him.
Yeah.
And a lot of people would say, well, why would you leave the Champions? Why would you leave such a dominant team? Why would you leave a team where you're clearly valued? And he played a lot of games, and, you know, he's won 2 titles at Chelsea. To go to not a struggling team, but certainly, you know, a team that hasn't quite found its feet yet. And we can only assume, you know, there's a good relationship with Mourinho there, but just that he saw the change and he saw something to be a part of. And I also hope there's still a little bit of, you know, United are a better club to be at than Chelsea.
Yeah.
Even in a downturn, you know, I think there's a bit more romanticism and just wanting something different in your career. So it is brilliant to see. And I hope that enthusiasm and that impact obviously maintains. Well, that's a lot about Matic. So I assume both of you sort of agree. You think he'll be the more key player than Lukaku. Nick, Lukaku gave the ball away 18 times. Is that a concern?
It is a concern, but, you know what we're going to get with him, and people have talked about his control and everything. I think his kind of maybe general build-up and team play will need to improve, because, you know, Zlatan was very good at that. So, you know, we're talking about him coming in and replacing goals for Zlatan, but Zlatan was great last season. And we talked about it a lot here, how even I was surprised he was actually a lot better than I expected in just his general build-up play and how he was linking up the team and things like that. So it's not something that, you know, Lukaku's so well known for. I mean, yeah, he might be well known for just holding the ball and laying it off a bit, but hopefully, you know, he's still young and he can improve all that side of his game. At the moment, just, yeah, the physicality, the speed, getting in. I mean, to be honest, until he scored, the other day. He hadn't done a great deal, but look, he's there to score goals. And this is exactly what we lacked last season. I mean, I think at home last season against West Ham, we drew the game, even though we hammered them. Yeah, that is the difference. These kind of couple of goals that he gets there. And, you know, we know that was our major weakness last year. Too many draws, especially at home. And yeah, this is what's going to be the big difference this season.
I mean, one thing I would say is that, yeah, we're saying that Matic is going to be hugely influential and impactful, but I do believe Lukaku will as well. And Nick, a question I kind of have on that, I guess. If before Colin read that stat out of losing the ball 18 times, was that a concern that you took from the game that he'd given the ball away? Was it even one that you had before he scored the goal? Because it's not something that I thought when we were in the stands watching the game. I felt that he was quite smart in what he was trying to do. I felt he was making the right choices. Yeah, he may have lost it a few times, but it wasn't by doing the wrong thing. And that's fine by me.
I think, as always, stats can be read into and can be misleading, you know. How many times is normal for a number nine to give the ball away? How many times do you want? You know, if he takes on a shot and it goes high and wide, he's giving the ball away.
Yeah.
But do you want him to not do that? You know, for me, it's a sort of a flawed metric. It's just because it does highlight a concern, I think, that Nick alludes to, that is there amongst fans, that he maybe isn't quite technically sharp enough. That is the big sort of question mark, alongside sort of can he cut it at the top level? You know, I think those are the two big things in terms of you know, the only real remaining question marks about Lukaku, because his scoring record and his career so far has been nothing short of amazing, you know, as we all know.
Yeah.
So, watching the game, I actually thought he was very tidy and linked up really well with people around him, just not quite enough, but I don't think that's necessarily his fault. But, I mean, my main takeaway, and I love Matic, I absolutely loved it, and I'm a big fan of him, and I can't wait till we start singing. Did we sing the Nemanja song? Did we?
Yeah, we did sing the Nemanja song. There's quite a few people who are saying, oh, we shouldn't sing that Vidic's song or whatever. But for me, it's the obvious thing to sing, really. Like, it's so obvious.
He actually came out and said, I would love it, Leno. I would be so touched if they did sing that song for me. So I just think, you know, why wouldn't he's a red now, you know? So
it did get an airing for sure.
It doesn't devalue Vidic in any way, you know? Like, it's not, you know, I feel Vidic would want us to sing that song. But on Lukaku, I don't think even Ibrahimovic, I'm not sure, scores that first goal, and definitely the second goal. No one on our team scores that second goal last year. How good is it to have a number nine who just, on his own, in the box, gets up, great ball from Mickey, of course, but wins the header, puts it away, doesn't header it at the keeper, headers it into the corner, which is a much better idea, you know, and just, I just was watching it thinking, that's just what he's going to give us, those two goals, that's fine, that's the game dead, you know, at 1-0, I'm sure we were all sitting thinking, you know, start of the second half, we could do another goal, and he does it.
Yeah.
He just puts it away from a half chance, and that's it. Done.
Mkhitaryan in, Lukaku 2-0. Too easy.
I don't know if you saw, actually, saw interview with Phil Jones post-match, and he was claiming, like, almost an assist for that second goal, you know. Because if you watch
it... I didn't realise he was anywhere near it.
Yeah. No, right, actually, yeah, go back and watch that second goal. Obviously, it's free kick from Mickey, but Phil Jones has obviously been instructed that he's done a great blocking off job. And that's the only reason that ball actually comes through to Lukaku. Go and watch back that goal and you'll actually be surprised at what Phil Jones, he pretty much takes out two players. And that's the only reason that ball comes into Lukaku. And he said that, yeah, we have specifically worked on this. But he was actually not that happy with the commentator because he said, yeah, we've worked on this, but you've bloody given it away now, so we're not going to be able to do it again.
Obviously, yeah. I would say the only other person deserving of assist is the fella who was marking Lukaku because he was like having a laugh and a joke. I don't know if you saw that on Match of Day, but he was basically having a laugh and then tying his shoelace, and Lukaku's ran away from him and scored a header, and I would be livid. Like, Gary Neville tore strips off him for it, which was absolutely fair, I thought.
No, of course you would, and Lukaku wasn't distracted and he did his job. For all our foreign listeners, I'm going to teach you something here. Around these parts, a lot of people around here would say that he's mustard.
Mustard, yeah, he is.
You know, he's solid. He does what you expect him to do. He gets the job done. And I definitely thought that was the case of both goals. It's exactly what you want, and it is exactly what we were missing. And, you know, I've seen so many comments about how it's only West Ham. And, yeah, it's only the first game of the season, but only West Ham. You know, it was only Watford who drew 3-3 with Liverpool. Only Burnley, who beat Chelsea at the weekend. It was only West Ham, Burnley, Stoke, West Brom.
Everyone, yeah.
Arsenal, etc. last season, who took points from us at Old Trafford. So
I like the way you're including Arsenal in that group of teams.
Exactly. I made a point to do that.
Offhand.
Everybody's working hard to be in the starting lineup, and you know, Marcus had a great game today. You know, he was really one of the top performers at the North, and he came in, did really well, and he scored the goal. So you know, everybody's fighting for the spots, and it's a positive problem for the manager.
Two other people, I suppose, we haven't spoken about. Rashford and Martial, a bit of an ongoing debate on the calf at the moment. I think it's titled Rashford versus Martial, like they're in some sort of fight to the death, Mortal Kombat kind of thing.
I'd watch that.
Oh, definitely. We'd only
Who
have,
would win? But,
well, that's the question. That's what we're about to talk about. So it's a tricky one for me, you know, and I think it divides opinion probably more than anything else on the calf at the moment. It's like the new Wayne Rooney about how you feel, more so about Martial, I think, than Rashford, because he's the one struggling, I guess, a wee bit. Although a lot of people would say, you know, his output is actually better than Rashford's in numbers, you know, and it's hard to argue against that. Nick, firstly, talk us through both of them. You know, they both played. What did you think?
Yeah, look, I mean, Rashford was terrorising Zabaleta all game, yeah. I mean, the amount of times he had a run there, and like you say, maybe he could have had a little bit more output than he did from there, but he had a great shot that hit the post. You know, he did get an assist, the first assist. So, yeah, you can't really complain that much. I think the big thing, I mean, look, we all know Martial had that amazing breakout season. And then last season, he kind of struggled to adapt to Mourinho's systems and ways, and he still obviously is not really favoured by Mourinho. It's pretty clear. He's made quite a few comments that he loves Rashford and that Rashford is doing exactly what he wants, whereas Martial hasn't still quite got exactly what he's wanting from him. You know, there's been all these rumours about whether Martial's going to leave and this kind of thing. In him, we know what he can do because we've seen him do it for us. He's got everything in his locker, and it just might be that he's not the right fit for a Mourinho kind of team. If he's happy to be a sub for us and come in when wanted, then yeah, we, you know, it's an amazing option to have from the bench. But I think really at the moment, Rashford is going to be the favoured choice for sure, and I don't have a problem with that. I mean, yeah, I love Rashford. Like I say, I do still think that naturally he's a striker and that maybe playing out left is not ideal for him. But he seems to be adapting to that role, though.
It just makes it all the more impressive, doesn't it?
Yeah, he seems to be adapting there. And yeah, we talked before about people like Thierry Henry, who, like, you know, were strikers coming in from the kind of left. You know, he still had somebody like Bergkamp, who was the main striker ahead of him, but still would end up being the top scorer in that team. So, you know, you can... There is kind of like players he can look to at the past and say, look, yeah, maybe that's the way I can go forward.
Yeah, he could look at Martial from 2 years ago, actually.
Well, I don't know, but Martial, though, that time was even playing forward, actually starting forward a lot of the time, wasn't he?
Well, I think it was about half and half, really. It was sort of, it started off forward and sort of went towards the wing towards the end of the season. So I think it sort of equaled itself out. But I actually agree with a lot of that, Nick.
Matic to Pogba, though. Mkhitaryan, Martial's through, and there it is, smartly taken by Anthony Martial.
Alex, I saw someone on the calf make comparison between Rashford and Martial and Henry and Anelka. Mm-hmm. So they both obviously came into the French setup at similar times, and everyone upon everyone thought that Anelka was the one to watch. It was the one that was going to be the big, big, big player, had all the skill,
sure,
far more natural ability, and people were like, you know, this guy's going to go all the way. And obviously we know what happened. Henry worked and worked and worked. Not to say he wasn't a good player. He's obviously a stunning player, you know, but got to Arsenal and really learned that left forward role, which then just carried him through to one of the Premier League's best ever strikers. One of my favourite strikers in the Premier League. I absolutely adored him when I was growing up. You know, his ability to always find the finish,
sure,
was just, you know, unerring. And Anelka's career, while it's not bad by any stretch of imagination, was not the dizzying heights that people would have predicted. And it was always felt that that was maybe a mentality issue, maybe a petulance thing, or just a lack of application. Maybe that's oversimplification, but do you see a parallel? Obviously, Rashford's so hardworking, Martial seemingly the sort of misunderstood genius, you know?
Yeah, I think it probably is a fairly apt comparison as it can be at this stage, in all honesty. I think it is potentially a very good shout. I could see Martial very much sort of being the misfortune of his own sort of, not, I don't think it's petulance and I don't think it's arrogance, maybe just either a lack of willingness to learn, or just sometimes there is a lack of ability to learn. Some players aren't great at adapting. Some players just aren't going to fit with certain managers. And sometimes I think managers can make a decision on a player. And, you know, it wouldn't be the first time that Mourinho's cast players aside and they've gone on to absolutely incredible things. So I don't think that, you know, if he didn't necessarily make it at United, that it would be an Anelka career of him moving around clubs. It might be that he goes on somewhere else and be a superstar. And that's, I think that's one of the concerns that people have, is that he's clearly shown that he's got so much talent, as Nick just alluded to. And if one of the problems with football at the moment is that it's based on such short-termism, you know, you need that those immediate results, you want that immediate impact, and managers who are around for, say, 1, 2, 3 seasons are making decisions on players who could potentially be around for 10 years plus. And that's somewhat problematic, because I think it's very fair for United fans to want both. You know, Martial was an absolutely great find that we took a punt on, and, you know, we gave him a lot of pressure and he took it very well. And I think he showed in that first season that he had the mentality of a potential star, in terms of coming into the Premier League and making it his own. In a season where we only scored 54 goals or whatever it was, an absolutely dreadful amount, he got a decent chunk of them. And in games where we struggled, he scored some very important match-winning goals, including in that, you know, that FA Cup semi-final at the end against Everton. Mm-hmm. And Rashford's obviously come through the academy. I think Rashford would be the one more willing to take a bit of a back seat, more willing to come in and play from the bench, and would still stick around. And I guess for some, that seems the more pragmatic option in keeping both. Ultimately, I think that if Rashford doesn't start adding goals to his game and Martial keeps coming on and giving those sub-performances that he did yesterday, and he keeps coming on and making a difference, or when he's given the chance, he takes it, I think Mourinho will take, and I think whoever's got the best output at the time will be the one who gets on the pitch. And I wouldn't be surprised to see a month of one and then a month of the other.
Yeah, I mean, I personally don't think it's a great way to operate, though. You know, I think...
Potentially not.
You know, people would have bemoaned the fact last year that Martial would have had a good performance, benched, played, not played well, benched. You know, there's no ability to get a rhythm there and to feel mm-hmm. comfortable, which is good for so many footballers, you know.
No, of course.
You know, I think Mickey's a number 10, and I love the fact that we're able to play two in the middle, as we spoke about earlier, that allows us to actually play that 10. And whilst Mata was brilliant the other day, I don't see why one can't play on the left and one on the right, or indeed a sort of a second striker role, you know.
Yeah.
But I do agree, I think they're both immense talents. I think it's a little harsh on Rashford in that, yes, he didn't get the goal, and he was, I mean, you could say spurned. I mean, the chance from a tight angle where he put it high and wide under a bit of pressure, he probably could have squared it from Mickey. He had the one that hit the post from a very tight angle.
Well, there was the Super Cup chance of the same making, you know.
Yeah, so he has started the season and even ended last season with it. Not the sharpshooting ability we saw when he first came on the scene. And I think Martial's goal of the weekend proved the difference in that regard. In terms of finishing, he is cooler. He is most definitely more composed and more capable when it comes to sort of instantaneous finishes, you know. But I think Rashford at the moment just gives you so much. I think the way he runs the ball is totally different to the way Martial does it. Martial has a glued to his foot, very sort of Messi-esque, you know, wants to beat 3-4 men in really tight, you know, an environment, and wants to slow it down before he does that. Rashford's the complete opposite. He wants to speed it up from the start, and he wants to blitz past people and run in behind, and just shows a bit more varied, you know, things in that he'll actually run off the ball when he doesn't have the ball, and I think he has maybe an eye for a better pass as well. So I think it's a tough choice for Mourinho, but certainly I would be so excited about both of them, and I really do hope both of them you know, start to perform for us, because I think it would just make such an impact if either one or both of them really added goals this year, you know.
Yeah, of course,
because we need those goals, as we spoke about last week. You know, Lukaku might score Ibrahimovic's goals, as we said, you know, as it is. But we still need more goals. We need goals from Pogba, Mkhitaryan.
Oh, we need another 30 goals, yeah.
And a winger, you know. And I would still not be above another winger coming in, you know.
I think it was a very positive performance with a good reflection of the confidence levels we have. I repeat, I think we have conditions to be a better team this season than we were last season.
The whole performance then yesterday, obviously, you both watched it together, obviously, the J-Stand, which I'm sure was awesome. But the whole performance just... It was just something we haven't seen. We certainly didn't see it last year under Mourinho, that kind of swagger. I mean, I was at the Leicester game last year when we won 4-2, and that was quite good because I think we were up by 4, basically, you know.
When they all corners.
And it was quite good. Yeah, well, they were nearly all corners. Yeah, yeah. I think 3 of them were corners. And that was sort of similar, but this was something else. This was total dominance. Obviously, our biggest win, which is so depressing since QPR 2014, you know, which is, you know, a long time for a 4-0, which isn't exactly like, you know, I mean, you know, 5-6, that's impressive. But in terms of the whole team performance, Nick, how do you feel about it? One of the better opening days?
Yeah, it is. But I mean, I will caveat it by saying, you know, we don't want to get too giddy about it, because it is like one game. And yeah, we won our opening game last season, and, you know, things didn't pan out as we wanted. But there is definitely like a feeling of confidence. You know, the team's coming together. Everybody has obviously talked about, yeah, it's Mourinho's second season. He always wins the league. And yeah, he's 1 year on. Big thing, like I said, we talked about Matic and Lukaku, is that they've slotted straight in as if they've been around for, you know, months and months. There's a feeling about the place. And like I say, yesterday as well, it was a great day. Like, there was a whole thing going on that we'll chat a bit about in J-Stand, where there's a group of lads trying to get the atmosphere going at Old Trafford. You know, I was in the ground earlier than I've ever been in my whole life in like 20 years of watching United. And like, there was people in there singing, whereas normally the way is that, oh, you drink in the pubs, go in the ground 5 minutes before kickoff, go to your seat. But yesterday there was a whole thing going on, people in the ground. And like I said, the feeling the whole day, and everything just went to plan. Like, I was a bit worried after a whole pre-match build-up. I said, what if we don't get the bloody result here?
Yeah.
But then, yeah, the result, you know, was amazing. We will, of course, say that maybe, I mean, I wouldn't say it flatters us a bit, but there was two very late goals. And until then, of course, we were only 2-0 up. And, you know, one West Ham goal in there that they might have nicked here and there. And then all of a sudden, you're worrying about the last few minutes. But we had a lot of chances. So, you know, you can't say we didn't deserve it. But yeah, 4-0 maybe looks a little bit better than it was. So I don't want to get too excited just yet. But yeah, look, that's what you want. A win, top of the league, great atmosphere, sunny day. What more do you want from your first day of the season?
I mean, all I could think I would want would be a big ginger fella from Stoke to hug and kiss when we score. So, Alex, I mean, were there hugs? Was there jubilation? Talk us through talk us through what it was like being in a match with Nick.
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, I've been with Nick a fair few times now. And I can't really talk too much about the post-match because that's R-rated, and it's not for the naive, innocent listeners.
That's a whole different show.
For another day. But no, it was a fantastic day, and I think Nick's got a point about maybe, you know, there was two late goals, but actually we could have been 3-4, 5-0 up much earlier in the game. You know, this wasn't a Van Gaal 3-4-0 where we were incredibly efficient and taking all our chances, and we didn't actually have that many shots. You know, you had the Rashford hit in the post, you had Matter's kind of, it was a somewhat square clearance on the line, another square that Lukaku got caught under his feet. You had a pass to Lukaku
block in the almost
box,
on the line.
Exactly. You know, you had a Rashford through on goal that he skied as he's had a bit of a knack of doing late. And all that, so, you know, we did have a lot of chances, and even though, yes, they might have nicked one and that might have made us look a bit nervy, they had nothing. You know, obviously they had, I think two chances, one at the end of the first half and then a header, which De Gea tipped over. Two good saves, but that's kind of standard par for the course in any game. I don't think there's any team who go a game without having one or two chances. So
yeah,
it was completely domineering, and every player played their role. There wasn't a weak link in that team, and there were some players who came in who did a very good job. So Blint, for example, who'd had a dreadful pre-season, when it mattered and we needed to rely on him, he came up on top, as he always does. He provided some natural width, which I think made a huge difference, having someone who doesn't necessarily clear the ball into the stands when he gets the chance to cross, like Darmian sometimes does. It was a very big blessing in terms of keeping that ball rotation going and putting some dangerous balls in. Mata offered what we spoke about Lingard for last week. He was popping up absolutely everywhere, supporting everyone. Everyone always had an outlet. He was always there. You could always play that pass to him. Mkhitaryan, after a quiet first half, played really well in the second half, got two assists. You had Jones at the back who pulled out another accomplished performance. It really was a total sort of performance from United across the board.
Yeah, it looked supremely balanced, which was great.
Yeah.
I'll echo what you said. I thought Blin came on, did a really good job after a very poor preseason, which made me very concerned. But having said that, you know, I couldn't fault him. He got a lot of the ball, particularly in the first half, and he did not waste it all. He fit in really well. Jones, again, when you can keep him fit, you start to remember what a bloody good player he is, you know, and that's great. For me, still a concern, and I'm glad we have Lindelof and Rojo to come back, because I do think they'll partner Bailey more often than not, because I just have to assume that Jones is going to get injured again. As you say, the sort of leaving the defence behind, everything else was just a real good click. You know, Matic holding Pogba free to do whatever he wants, and the front three plus Lukaku were just, you know, all equally very good, and the subs all made an impact as well. Nick, do you think we'll see, I mean, it was a 4-2-3-1. You know, Herrera, I suppose, would be very hard done by, you know, not to have started.
Well, yeah, we were actually quite surprised by the lineup. We were actually in the ground already, as I said, as it came up on the screen. And both of us were like, but pleasantly surprised.
I was very pleasantly surprised to see Mata. Very pleasantly surprised. I didn't expect Mata to start at all.
Same.
I thought that we were definitely going to be having, you know, I thought Pogba, Matic, Herrera is set, and then there's going to be three more kind of attacking players. So to actually have what I'd call four attacking players was great, because, you know, something I complained about a lot last season was that we were playing too defensively. I want to be more, see more goals, more attacking. And, you know, Mourinho hopefully is going to deliver that this season. He went for, you know, two in midfield, and really Pogba had pretty free license to be going forward as well. It was only really Matic that was more on the defensive side. And as we've said already, he was even still making some pretty decent attacking runs himself. So, yeah, that was the best like thing for me, was like the way we've set up, we're going to score goals. And yeah, that's the, we did see a bit of it early last season, and then it kind of fell off and went a lot more defensive later on. But I think that this year, against the so-called weaker teams, hopefully this is the way we're going to be setting up. It'll just be interesting to see what he does in those kind of big away games and things like that, whether, you know, he goes back to parking the bus or whatever. But yeah, Herrera was probably pretty hard done by. And in fact, I had him in my fantasy football team, so I thought he was pretty assured to play. But anyway, not too worried about that at the moment.
I think that's one of the most interesting things from yesterday, actually, that Pogba was in a deeper midfield role. And yet it looked incredibly balanced and he looked incredibly comfortable. I think most people, including myself, thought that he would maybe be best in a bit of a midfield three. And as much as people have spoken about Matic giving him the license to roam, maybe that's true, but it wasn't a case of, you know, a diamond with Matic at the back and Pogba forward. They were very much a pivot, and Pogba did his fair share of defensive work as well. And their touch maps are very similar across the board.
Yeah.
You know, he was absolutely everywhere, and he was very skillful in possession, I must say. Like, the amount of times that he sort of nipped in front to win the ball to keep us in possession, and then a turn or a flick or a back, whatever it may be, to keep us in possession and keep the ball moving quickly. I thought he was brilliant. He was moving it around so quickly. I'm surprised it's taken us 23 minutes to really talk about him, because it was his best performance for United in a long time. He looked incredibly comfortable, and it was really pleasant to see him sort of be able to dictate a bit from a deeper position, but also, you know, still manage to get in scoring positions and still offer that creativity to put people behind and stuff, because it was another game where he could have had a couple of assists, you know, playing balls in behind the defence. He was absolutely fantastic at once again. And yeah, it's hopefully a sign of things to come.
Martial, Pogba, four! West Ham have crumbled at the end under intense and delightful pressure from Manchester United, who have simply passed and flitted and cruised their way through. Manchester United have four.
Yeah, I mean, he was absolutely immense, and we haven't mentioned yet. And I just do expect him to be that good. He's a supreme footballer, but his highlight reel, particularly from West Ham, is, you know, his individual, you know, every touch.
Yeah.
You know, there's so much on there that's so good. You know, passes, beating players, clever tricks, you know, obviously his goal and all that is superb. I just thought, you know, I was watching Matic get after people, and I just thought, imagine Herrera in this as well. You know, it could really choke a team, you know, for, and I think that's the good thing, is that Mourinho now has a lot of tactical options, a lot more than he did last year, just basically from Matic and Lukaku, you know, straight away open that up.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah,
you know, against a team that maybe is a bit more combative in midfield, you know, let's not forget, Lanzini didn't play, Kouyaté didn't play, Andy Carroll didn't play, who, you know, are all big players for West Ham, as well as a few others. They had a big...
Yeah, Antonio.
Yeah, exactly. Antonio, yeah, very, very physical and just a regular feature in that team. So let's not kid ourselves, they were missing even a chunk of their own first team, you know. Not that I think it would have made too much difference, but it could have made it more competitive. But, you know, in those tighter games against the better teams and in Europe, I think even as a midfield three, I just thought, you know, a team mightn't get any respite. You know, we might actually be able to see a really, really sort of good pressing United team, which we've never, you know, we've seen teams like Dortmund play that way, we've seen teams like Liverpool play that way, and I'm not saying we're going to do that, but certainly with Matic and Herrera, we are much more capable now. and certainly much more able in Mkhitaryan as well. So very, very encouraged in that regard. Moving on then, obviously, some other interesting games. Very, very busy opening week. So I'm sure, Nick, you were delighted with Rooney's goal for Everton.
Yeah, look, I could, don't mind. I was quite happy for him to do well over there.
Through gritted teeth.
No, yeah, I don't have any problem as long as he doesn't score against us. I don't mind what he does over there now. Like I say, wasn't my favourite player for a long time, but yeah, I still recognise that he did well for us for years. I had actually heard, had spoke to a couple of Everton fans, and they said they hadn't been that impressed with him in kind of pre-season and all, and weren't too sure. But you know, he's delivered for them in that first game. Let's see what he does from there. I haven't seen anything of it. I don't know if he's actually playing striker for them or just behind or what.
He played everywhere. So obviously, being from Stoke, I've got a few mates who watched the game, and they said that they couldn't really pinpoint a position for him. He seemed to have basically a free role across the sort of the middle third of the pitch, just up and down, both coming deep, but also being the one getting into the box and whatnot. And they said it was a very free role, and he did have a very, very good all-round performance. And obviously, he also got that goal, and it was a good goal.
It is a good goal. You
know, it was a good run. He got in front of Joe Allen, and then he swept it home, as we've seen him do so many times. And they tell me that his touch was completely on point. You know, he was trapping balls with no problem at all, and doing everything that he's been accused of losing 5 years ago for United. But yeah, apparently, by all means, he had a very, very good game. And I'm glad to see it.
Yeah, it is good to see it. And I saw a lot of people on the cast saying, you know, I've never celebrated a goal for another team, you know, so, you know, emphatically, like actually like getting out of your chair and going, yeah, come on, like you would a United goal, you know, because a lot of the form does, you know, does have a lot of time for him and loving the bits, really. Certainly I would be in that camp. But I appreciate why people would be, you know, at the end of their tether with him and wanted him to go. I wanted him to go, but I can just be so happy for him because I really appreciate him in terms of what he gave to United. The goal is lovely in that he starts the move and then breaks his neck to get in, you know, and it's just great. If anyone scores that kind of goal, I like to see it because it shows that real drive and you've just outworked everyone else. And then once you've got there, the header's absolutely quality. My only concern for Everton would be, you know, when he was chasing the record and he hit that amazing free kick that some people probably still would call a cross, even though it clearly wasn't a cross.
Against Stoke.
Yeah, if Rooney has something to play for, like something short term, I think, that's there that can be gotten, he's really motivated, you know, and I think he'll always be brilliant on a debut, and he'll always be brilliant when there's, you know, a story to tell or something like that. You know, it really drives him on a wee bit. I would come back to it in 3 or 4 games time and see if he's still looking that impassioned and that, you know, and that quality and that sort of driven, you know, because I do think that is the kind of the hallmark of the end of his career, is that drive that set him apart in the early part of his career seemed to have evaporated, certainly at United.
I can hear you're still really missing him, aren't you, Colm? I can tell you really wanted to have a good chat about him, didn't you?
Oh yeah, well, this could be the rest of the podcast, Nick. I think we might have to change the title, obviously. No, look, you're absolutely right. Moving on then. Liverpool, Chelsea, both dropping points. What do you make of that, Ox?
Oh, standard, isn't it? Well, Liverpool anyway. Shipping 3 goals, it doesn't surprise me at all. They need to address that defence. You know, they can't go on just buying great attacker after great attacker and playing great forward front football. You know, they need to become more disciplined. They need to be able to defend set pieces. They need to be more solid at the back, else they can't go on. And obviously, it's a joy for us to see that they haven't plugged that gap yet. Because if they could get that defence sort of all singing and dancing, and have a really solid foundation for them to move off, then they'd be a scary sight, you know, because they are very good going forward. But as long as they're leaking goals at the back, then it's of no huge concern to us.
Yeah, I think Salah will be a good signing. Yeah, you know, he looked really sharp. Firmino looked brilliant, and Mane scored a great goal, a really good goal. But as you say, hilariously, all the same problems exist, and the goals they conceded were hilarious. Chelsea, Nick, that was just a disaster.
Yeah, I don't really get what goes on with Chelsea. Like, you know, Mourinho had that winning season and then they fell apart the year after, and it looks like they're going to do the same thing again.
It's a roller coaster.
Yeah. The weird thing is, like, you know, they've won the league and then they've destroyed the team they had. Like, Costa's been sent off to Brazil. I don't know what the hell he's doing over there. And Matic sold to us. So it's a bizarre thing. You know, normally you win the league, then you want to build on that winning squad. And it looks like Conte has not been happy about Matic leaving. And, you know, it's not something he wanted. I don't really know what's going on in the background there. Like I say, we never really knew exactly what the story was in how Chelsea ended up crumbling so much in Jose's second season recently. And yeah, I don't know. There's something in the background again. I don't know whether it comes from Abramovich. I've read that he's going through a divorce and whatever. I don't know if there's any link through that or whatever. But look, let's just be happy that they're falling apart at the moment.
And I think, are they playing Spurs next week with, a centre-back missing? Hazard won't be back. Obviously, Fabregas is now suspended as well. So, you know, it could get worse for them before it gets better. A lot of people have tipped Conte to be the first managerial, well, whether he leaves or gets sacked, we don't know. But again, I think as much as we might get carried away with a good performance, we might also get carried away with a poor performance, you know. And
I think Burnley didn't win an away game all season last year or whatever, and we're like 3-0 up in this game.
Was it not at home, that they struggled so much?
It was away. They'd hardly won a point away from home. It? Yeah, they literally didn't even get a point apart from us. That was their like only point away from home or something.
Yeah. I mean, in fairness to them, obviously down to, what was it, 9 men in the end, but still...
Come back to 3-2, didn't they?
Yeah, and I thought Morata looked pretty good.
Yeah, he didn't start, and looks like he was just slowly working his way in, but I'm pretty sure he'll be starting from now.
Yeah.
Well, let's see. But yeah, look, let's be happy about this. And in fact, it's this... You know, we talk about our chances and whatever. So yeah, Chelsea struggling. Liverpool have got this whole... Coutinho.
Oh yeah, Coutinho. Yeah, he's going. He's not in the squad for their Europa League
That's causing a big shadow over their start of the season.
Yeah.
Arsenal scraped a late win after being down to Leicester.
Yeah.
So yeah, little City maybe are looking good, but yeah, at the moment I think we've got to be looking pretty positive. Tottenham haven't bought anybody in at all, so yeah, they've got a damn good first 11. But after that, yeah, you know, they get a few injuries. You're not sure what's going to happen with them. So yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons for us to be feeling pretty positive, really.
Big time. I suppose the only other game of note, Alex, was the mighty Huddersfield coming up with a bang.
Yeah, definitely.
And also, you know, Palace, Fosu Mensah played at centre back. So, I mean, obviously great for Huddersfield. What did you make of that game?
I mean, it was just the most out of left field thing in a long time, wasn't it, really? You know, Huddersfield, they came up with that absolutely dreadful playoff final at the end of last year. It was one of the worst games I've ever seen, never mind one of the worst finals, one of the worst games.
Neither team wanted to win, wanted to even play football. It was so weird, yeah.
Weren't Huddersfield also the team who came up with a negative goal difference?
Yeah, they were, I think, yeah.
Well, it was very low anyway, which is absolutely mind-boggling, but clearly they were losing, you know, games 2-0, but then the ones they were winning by one goal. But for them to then come up... And, you know, Palace are an all right team, you know, an established Premier League team now, really. For them to come up and deliver them a 3-0 beating was just absolutely incredible, and fair play to them, because I still don't think they'll get a great deal many points this season. But what a day for the fans, really.
Yeah,
absolutely. Sense. Must have been incredible. Absolutely incredible.
And Fosu Mensah was decent by all accounts, as much as you can be in a 3-0 loss when you're playing centre back. But, you know, no one seemed to be blaming him. He had one very good tackle where he tracked back, and, you know, it was obviously a certain
last-ditch tackle.
But no, it was a big weekend. Hopefully next weekend's just as good.
I'm very excited to see how he does there, because I think he is, you know, we always loan players out, and I think, yeah, it'd be good for them to get some time, because in the future they could be a bit of a squad player for a season, and then it'd be good to make a bit of money on them, because that's not something that United do enough. But he's one who, you know, could actually make it United. He's one of that ability and talent. It's definitely, you know, a foreseeable option for us in the future. So I'd love him to do well, because it's a good team for him to be at. They hopefully won't be fighting relegation. They'll hopefully be somewhat middling. They're in the Premier League, so he's at the standard that he needs to be. And also, De Boer should know him, I imagine, from his Ajax days. And he's obviously a very capable manager. He's actually quite pragmatic for a Dutch manager, but despite the 3-0 loss, he's typically quite pragmatic. But obviously, still, he would expect a level on the ball that you might not typically see of a British side. So I'm really excited to see what he does there. I think it's going to be a really interesting season for him.
Nick, you mentioned earlier, obviously, some goings-on in the J-Stand for the game. A few murals.
Yeah, I did want to give a shout-out because there's some lads who have been doing some hard work over the summer, basically. You know, it's been a theme for years now about the atmosphere at Old Trafford, football grounds in general, England. Things have gone downhill. But, you know, there's been things happening the past couple of years. It was called the singing section and we're kind of forgetting that name and calling it J-Stand now. And yeah, I moved there as soon as it started because I think if the club and fans are trying to do... Hey?
Because you're a top red, right?
Yeah. Well, no, I tell you what, you know, a lot of people who you talk about kind of top reds and whatever, there was a lot of people who were quite against the whole J-Stand thing. And some people weren't happy about the way it all came about because people were moved out of their seats. And there's still a lot of kind of Stretford enders who are a bit dubious about the whole thing. But for me, look, if the club and some fans are trying to do something about the atmosphere, I said, look, this is something that needs to be supported. So, yeah, I mean, I moved there straight away. And there's been around us, it's good. I mean, yeah, I think you've both been in there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it was amazing. I thought it was brilliant. Loved it.
Yeah, but it has been a bit in pockets. And I think we're quite lucky where we are that there's quite a few kind of song starters in that section. I do know some people in other areas around that J-Stand because it covers two different blocks and they say, oh, it's not as good in our little bit. So I think we're quite lucky where we are because there's a lot of people who have the kind of flags and we're on in that area.
And for those who don't know Nick, they've never seen him before. So Nick is your token 7-foot guy that you get every football match, who sort of lords over everyone else and orchestrates just due to his height, pointing people out and starting the songs. That's what you need to envisage when you think of Nick.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't actually call myself a song starter. There's other guys who are those guys. But yeah, I'll always try and like carry them going on when somebody else starts them. But yeah, like I said, this summer, there's been a lot of hard work going on behind the scenes by a few guys. And they're just like, you know, standard fans trying to do something about it. So yeah, they started a crowdfunding and there's been about $3,000 raised already just amongst people in J-Stand. And the first couple of things that have been paid for has been, yeah, a massive mural went up for Brian Robson, one of our old like legends. And there was also a smaller piece, but looked great. It was like a mosaic done for Eric Cantona in one of his classic like Messiah icon poses. And that was actually done for free by another United fan. And then, like I said, there's more money being raised. There'll be a much bigger mural. There's been about six. There was a bit of voting went on and six players have been chosen there, you know, Scholes, Giggs, like the typical names, but there's also a couple in there people might not expect, like Whiteside and a few others who are going to be on
Solskjaer
it.
Solskjaer was there, right?
Solskjaer was also, yeah, top of the list.
99 sliding.
Yeah, you know, and it shows
and,
like...
Fellaini getting hit in the face with football, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not sure he's going to make it just yet. But, so,
bit
yeah.
of humour, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, look, like I say, I think all these kind of things need to be supported. And yeah, and they've been organizing a few marches as well. You know, people met up at the Tollgate pub pretty early, try and get some songs going, march down to the ground. And actually, Brian Robson himself turned up to kind of unveil his mural. I actually managed to miss that. I was like running around
a
bit.
90 after... minutes earlier than you've ever been.
Yeah.
And you still managed to miss it. Right?
I mean, I missed it by about 5 minutes. There was some Jobsworth on the turnstile who was like arguing with me about whether I could bring my chocolate bar in or not, and
searching you for the eighth time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. No, I couldn't agree more. I think it's something that absolutely has to be supported, and I think we should certainly put the link for the cash raising in the thread, obviously, if anyone wants to do it, because I'm sure a lot of people would, because it's just brilliant. And you know, anything like that that increases the, you know, the sort of culture and the history and the just the atmosphere around the ground during the game, before the game, after the game, but just in general, you know, you just want that to be a sort of hallowed turf, a place where, you know, it does just feel special, and these little things really, really add up in that regard. And I think Old Trafford is a sort of, it's an amazing stadium and it's amazing on match day, but, you know, you wouldn't argue that it is a bit odd sometimes. You know, the crowd can be a bit, and, you know, I say this as a day tripper myself and a foreign fan, which I would count myself as, you know, you get a lot of that and there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, I think it's amazing. It should be celebrated, but it does kind of, it's just a big place to fill, and it's never going to be like that cramped, tight, atmospheric, almost aggressive atmosphere that, you know, football fans sort of love in a sort of vitriol kind of way. But I think things like this do kind of bring that out a wee bit more in a very positive way, you know, and I think it's just brilliant.
Yeah, there has been a lot of changes over the years, you know, in the ground. Like, I can remember going when it was only about, I don't know, 45,000 capacity or something. And, you know, when those smaller grounds, it's much easier to generate a load of noise. Now it's a big ground, very open. The acoustics yeah. aren't so great. You know, there's so many things that have changed, like the whole demographics of the fans who come. But I think these guys are trying to say, look, let's start from scratch, try and get a bit of a movement going, get people singing in the RC section. Hopefully it can spread to surrounding areas. And yeah, I just think, yeah, it's, people really need to know about this, support it, and let's try and see where it can go from there. I mean, yeah, there's no reason we can't. People talk about the kind of away day atmosphere, and yeah, for the first time in a long time I felt that kind of atmosphere at the match at Old Trafford, whereas normally, you know, it's not as good as going away. But yeah, people were singing pre-match, people were in the ground like an hour before, even 2 hours before, like singing and everything, or in the concourse. And yeah, it's not something normally associate with the home match, but yeah, hopefully it's a sign of things to come. And yeah, people should look out, even if you're not in J Stand, come and join the kind of marches, come and join the kind of pre-match sing song. You know, I'll try and post up myself whenever these kind of things are organized. All are welcome, you know. We want to try and make it an inclusive thing.
Yeah,
it doesn't have to be only for enjoy J Stand. Everybody, you know, pre-match can at least get going together, and then yeah, go into the ground and try and make some noise.
Well, yeah, we want it to snowball, right? So it's difficult in a big stadium, like you were saying, to get the noise and to get everyone working together to create that atmosphere. But if we get pockets doing it, and if we can have other stands follow the example of J Stand and get their own thing going. So if you're in another stand and you think that, you know some guys and you could start something like this of your own in your stand, then get it done. Because if we can get some pockets doing it around the ground, then hopefully that spreads and it's infectious. And if we can get people, you know, in the ground daily doing a bit of a pre-match sort of get together and sing song, get people involved, get those day trippers involved and those tourists involved in singing those songs nice and early so that they feel comfortable doing so in the game, I think could be a really good way to try and combat that. And if it falls flat on its face, then it really doesn't matter, does it? It'll be good fun getting to that moment and giving it a try. So everyone needs to do their best to get behind it, really.
And the murals, obviously, I think, lead nicely on. Obviously, the main one that was unveiled by the man himself, you said, Nick, was, of course, Brian Robson, our Captain Marvel. And that leads us, obviously, to touch on a really awesome thread that's in on Red Cap at the moment, which I've seen a few of these crop up sort of this season over the summer, and they're absolutely brilliant, you know. I think they're done by people who do, like, drafts and stuff and just have this immense football knowledge and this archive of sort of videos, particularly from, you know, past players that it just isn't so easy to find and to know about, you know, which is great and a great resource for everyone. This particular one is from Hogan Benito, which is just a whole case study, basically, on Brian Robson, Captain Marvel, which is just an awesome thread. And other people have just chipped in with great, you know, quotes, memories, videos, everything like that, you know. Our longest serving captain and just an immense player for us. So it's just great to have a look back. And as we're trying to do on United Hour this year, is just include some little piece within every episode that's just a little bit different, that isn't just looking at the game or the game ahead. And it's just to talk about something that might have happened or something that's going on in football. So, Alex, Brian Robson.
Both me and you are kind of too young to remember him. When I was sort of first born was when he was very, very much coming to the end. But I think it's important that, you know, even for our listeners who are more coming through the Premier League era, look back at the sort of influence he had on our history. You know, the what he won with us as a captain. He was our longest serving captain. He won 3 FA Cups, a European Cup Winners' Cup. He won 2 Premier League titles right at the end of his career. And the influence that he had on that class of 92, on Roy Keane, who was basically Roy Keane's star and, you know, the player that he really modelled himself on. And he was absolutely immense for us, you know, over a long period. And I think it's good that people go and reflect on that and look at some of the videos, because he was incredibly influential and inspiring, both on the pitch and off the pitch. And on the pitch, you get the impression, and what a lot of the quotes say from ex-players is that, you know, when he was on the pitch, you knew you were going to win. He was one of those players. He was incredible at sort of, he was very all-encompassing, both as a personality, but as a player, he was very hard in the tackle. He was all around the pitch, but also he was scoring goals. And I think he scored 99 goals for United from midfield, which is obviously a huge achievement. And he was sort of, he was completely a breakneck into the tackle, sometimes at his detriment. And I think Fergie spoke about how, you know, he had 3 broken legs, a broken collarbone, 101 hamstring injuries, ankle injuries, and he still played till 37. And it tells you something about the man, because he was just imperious, you know, just completely. And one thing that I found really interesting when I was going through that Fed and reading some of the quotes is that everyone talks about how great he was all round. But Fergie sort of said he had this sort of, he was incredibly brave and courageous, which a lot of people spoke about, but he really pinpointed something, and he said that he had a quality that you can't coach in players, and that was timing. You know, if two players go up for a ball in the air, a red jersey and another journey, Brian would know where it's going to land. You know, if a ball was coming to the back post, he'd be there. He know he has to get there. At the front post, he knows he has to be there, and he's always there. And he had the talent to time things, to be at the right place at the right time in the right context. And the courage that he influenced, he had because of that, was absolutely astounding. And really, I guess, you know, when we're always talking about the famous number seven jersey, David Beckham, Cristiano Ronaldo, George Best, Eric Cantona, he doesn't come into that conversation enough because he definitely is, you know, an absolutely huge, huge player in United's history. And I'm sure, you know, Nick or maybe even Nick's dad could say a lot more on him. I'm really not doing him justice, but I implore all of you, whether you're on Redcaf, whether you're a Redcaf lurker, or whether you never go on Redcaf, to just have a look at that Fred and look at some of the performances that he inspired, because he really was some player.
Yeah, I mean, even for me, like, you know, I was quite young when Robson was at his peak, because, yeah, he's probably like our kind of legend of the 80s, yeah? You know, he was still going in those early 90s and was around for those first couple of Premier League wins for us. So, yeah, people still remember him for that, but he started being more of a bit part player then. And he was more that kind of dressing room influence, whereas not maybe having as much influence on the pitch. But yeah, I mean, as a player, for the kind of younger fans out there, if you think of Roy Keane adding a load of extra goals, then yeah, that's Brian Robson. And, you know, he was that proper like box-to-box midfielder. He was, you know, it came to us as a British record transfer fee in the early 80s. So yeah,
from
he was
West
already.
Brom, right?
Hey. Yeah,
from West Brom, right? Yeah,
yeah, from West Brom, exactly.
$1.5 million was the British transfer.
Yeah, 1981, 1.5 million.
Which is an admin fee.
Yeah, he was our captain for years and years. It's the FA Cups that are famous. I mean, the actual mural that's gone up now at Old Trafford is from a famous night, 1984, which a lot of fans still talk about as the best atmosphere ever at Old Trafford. I wasn't there at that time. But yeah, I hear it from a lot of other people. And yeah, we were basically 2-0 down from, in the, it was the Cup Winners' Cup quarter-final, 2-0 down. We were from the away leg in Barcelona, and he managed to turn it round for a 3-2 win. He scored two of them. And yeah, I mean, you can compare it to that kind of classic Keane performance out in Turin,
yeah,
we went through to the semi-final. We did actually get knocked out by eventual winners Juventus there. But yeah, it's still a famous night in the history of United. And that is the mural that's gone up there. It's of him being held aloft by like fans celebrating post-match after that win. And as I said, yeah, Robbo turned up, because he was really happy. I heard that when he heard that this mural was coming up, so he was there in J Stand and yeah, celebrated with the fans there. And I think he was really happy. He's still like a United ambassador.
Yeah, he's a very genuine man, isn't he?
Yeah, he's also had troubles with kind of you know, cancer and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's coming through that, and he's still very involved with the club. But yeah, like I say, any younger fans, go back and have a look at some of these videos, because yeah, it's a period in United's history that's not that celebrated, because obviously we didn't win the league. You know, there's a couple of FA Cups there and then, and it's just a shame that, yeah, we didn't have some better players to remember those kind of teams a bit better. I mean, yeah, there is also Norman Whiteside, who was around that time as well, who's still remembered as a bit of a cult hero,
yeah,
and will go up in one of these murals as well around there. But yeah, the 80s is not always remembered as a great time, but fans actually remember it as a brilliant time for like just atmosphere, following the club, that kind of thing. And yeah, that's why people talk about that period in the club still with a lot of fondness, even though, yeah, all we have to show for it was a few FA Cups.
There's a great anecdote. I think it might be in Class of 92, actually, but it's from Giggs when he started out and he spoke about how the Class of 92 really looked up to Robson and the influence he had on them. But he spoke about one of his first games at United, and he was off on the left wing, and the right back of the opposition was giving him a bit of a tough time, you know, as you would a new young winger, pacey little tricky winger coming in. He was giving him a bit of a tough time. He told him that he was going to break his legs. So, as you would, Giggs went and told big brother, Brian Robson. And Brian was curious, as you would be. You know, he's like, oh, he said that, did he? Said he was going to break your legs. Okay, you play central midfield for the next few minutes, and let me just pop over to left wing. Of course, a few minutes later, he comes back to centre mid and tells Giggs to get back over there. He'll be fine now. And of course he was. And I think we all know what Brian Robson went over there and did. Something about asking the right back if his brother had a wife or something like that. But no, obviously he's gone over there and he's put his mark down. And he was a huge influence. But one thing that I saw mentioned so much was how, even though he was such a sort of tough tackler and a very sort of strong competitor, his aggression didn't really boil over. He wasn't looking for trouble. You know, something that I think has been aimed at Keane sometimes. He just simply wanted to win and he was doing everything he could to win. And he was fantastic at it. And yeah, like I said, I think it's really worth going back and looking at his achievements for United and his achievements outside of United, which, you know, will of course include making Vinnie Jones his most hardest man in football, which I'm sure he was ecstatic about.
Yeah, that, I mean, that is the accolade we would all aspire to, and I'm sure every professional footballer aspires to.
Most definitely.
Yeah, it's the one to win. No, it's certainly, it's an amazing thread, it really is. It's a tremendous piece of work, and a lot of effort as well, I suppose, has gone into that from
Hulk. Yeah, of course, so, yeah.
I think massive, you know, thanks to him for that, because, you know, as you've both touched on, it's just a must read, it really is, because it's so good, and it's so good to see, you know, the words of others who, you know, you hold in